Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Registered dietitian Sarah Keogh, good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome back. And we're going to talk today about yo-yo dieting. So before we get into what it is and what it does to the body, these things all start in the mind, don't they? Are we too hard on ourselves and our bodies?
God, yes, absolutely. We really, really are. And I think there's, you know, when you look in terms of weight, there's the huge difference between where weight is impacting your health, for example, where it's affecting maybe things like blood pressure and so on, and someone who's just, who's actually a perfectly healthy weight, but isn't just this held up, ideal, extremely thin person. And I think we forget that there's ranges of health where, you know, a little bit of what I'm going to call squidge is perfectly normal. And we don't actually need to be obsessively thin all the time or ripped or whatever, you know, you're kind of going for with it.
Okay. And obviously this agenda is kind of being pushed at us. I suppose social media is the main...
huge amount. I was only talking to a father recently worried about his 12-year-old who's thinking about what he's eating because of what he's watching on social media. And that pressure is starting to have this ideal what's out of reach for most people's body.
Yeah. And not just young people either.
Oh, no, it's across the board. It's, you know, and we start even seeing girls 8, 9, 10 thinking about, you know, what's the fat on my body? And then right through to adults. And at any age, like, you will absolutely meet people in old age who are still worried about body fat and
really?
So on. Yeah, you know, it's pervasive. And, you know, the ideals a lot of people are chasing are based in unusual sets of genetics. You know, a lot of people are never going to, you know, build, you know, if you're not a broad-shouldered person, there's a limit to how much going to the gym is going to make you broad. And if you're not a 6-foot tall woman, there's like not a whole lot you're going to do. So genetics are part of it. And sometimes we are chasing an ideal that actually is just impossible for our body shape.
Yeah, and some people spend their whole lives chasing
they
that ideal and never get there. Yeah. There are kind of seasonal cycles, are there, in how it gets pushed at us, kind of fad dieting and yo-yo dieting. Like, we probably start getting get in shape for Christmas now,
yeah.
Then there's New Year, New You, then it'll be on to get bikini ready for the summer,
yep.
Or whatever, yeah.
And then September is another time, and it's actually the time I see most people step up and start thinking about their weight. Or, to be honest, what I like a little more in the last few years is people are more interested in strength and fitness and a little bit less interested in what they look like. And I think that's a small shift that I hope will grow in terms of people thinking about their weight or their health or their eating in terms of health and not just in terms of how I'm going to look in, you know, a swimsuit or in a shirt or whatever.
So what is yo-yo dieting?
So yo-yo dieting is the thing a lot of people fall into where they come along to a fad, the latest fad diet, and there's been millions over the years, and they follow a strict, often very restrictive diet for, you know, a length of time, and then it just becomes too hard. There's a point where you just get too hungry and your body is going to make you eat, and then you're just going to put the weight back on again. And then when the guilt of that gets too much, people go back into the next diet. So we call it yo-yo dieting because their weight literally yo-yos up and down. And we know that when people do that, it actually increases the risk of things like type 2 diabetes. It makes it more likely they've things like high blood pressure and so on. And what's very interesting is that the research is clear that the more crash diets you go on, the fatter you get. So ultimately, it's in the
really?
Long term. Yeah, we see more weight gain. People who actually don't do any crash diets are much more likely to hold their weight steady, even if it's at a slightly higher weight, than people who actually diet over and over and over again.
So what kind of crash diets do people do?
Oh, well, there's millions of them and variations. So there's everything from, you know, we've had, I only had a post up on Instagram there at Sarah Keogh RD about it, just looking at all of these different fads. I mean, there's been, you know, keto diets, low carb diets, low fat diets. You know, in the mid 80s, everyone was supposed to cut out protein to lose weight. You've had the cabbage soup diet. You have intermittent fasting is really popular at the moment. You know, there's just hundreds of them. You know,
and the bad guy changes all the time, does it?
Yes. Well, that's the thing. It has to be something new and exciting. So,
right.
You know, I think late 90s, everyone was cutting out fat and everything was fat free and 0% fat. But then, you know, 15 years later, fat was your friend and carbs were bad and we're all supposed to stop eating bread. And, you know, I'm sure fat is due another focus in the next 5 to 10 years. Fat will be the baddie again. But it's, you know, I think these days the one that's actually I really would have concern about is this idea of monitoring your blood glucose levels.
Oh, yeah, that's a big thing now. Yeah.
You know, and you're seeing, and it is a lot of the under 25s I see doing this, and they're going around with these wearable blood glucose monitors. And I think the attraction for it is that you can hook it up to your phone and it will tell you what your blood glucose is doing. And, you know, I've been sitting in clinic.
And this is, they have very then strict kind of eating habits that you eat, you will eat a certain a leaf of lettuce before you have your dinner, and it's
yeah, or you're drinking lemon juice to get the acid in. You're like, and yeah. But what this is selling you is the idea that normal rises in your blood glucose after eating are actually wrong, but it's totally accurate. You know, like you're going to eat your food, it's going to be digested, it's going to come into your blood because that's how it is then transported around your body, and then it'll empty out again. And if you think of it nearly like a delivery truck, you've got to fill it up with your glucose when you eat, and right. then that delivery truck has to get around all your cells, and then it will be empty again. So it's normal for it
so
to go
up. So the blood
a
sugar
bit.
Spike that we have come to think of as
spike.
A bad
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, this is it. And it's, yeah. you know, it sounds terrible, doesn't it, to spike, but it's normal. Like, we'd actually be more worried about you if your blood glucose didn't go up a little bit when you eat, because it means you're not absorbing your food.
Okay, so that whole thing is wrong.
Totally. Now, if you've diabetes, it's a different yeah. thing. If someone has an issue regulating their blood glucose, but all of the extreme things that I see about this, it is normal for blood glucose to rise after eating. And for 2 hours after eating, like even someone with diabetes, we would tell them not to check their blood glucose until 2 hours after a meal.
Okay, geez, you've ruined a lot of people's gig there now. Okay, intermittent fasting.
So intermittent fasting isn't the worst of the fads that are going, in fairness to them. And it is a fad. People get very excited when I say that, but next year it'll be something else that they're looking at. So intermittent fasting is another way of reducing calories. And that's a thing central to all of these sort of fad diets is whatever way they tell you or how they dress it up, you will eat fewer calories. So whether it's a keto diet, we see a drop in calories. A low fat diet, we see a drop in calories. Low carb diet, and so on. So with intermittent fasting, the idea is that you shorten the period of time that you can eat. Now, there's variations on it. There's what we call the 5-2, which is where you'll eat for 5 days and then 2 days you will limit your food. And then there's the 16-8, where you'll eat for 8 hours in the day and then fast for the other 16. But that just, it reduces your opportunities to eat. So what we know is when people do intermittent fasting, they reduce their total calories by about 25%. What I do see with it, though, it's being sold as, you know, it reduces inflammation and it lowers cholesterol and it's better for blood glucose, but none of the studies actually are backing that up. And I was at a big conference, yeah. yeah. And it's something I've been looking over the last few years, because you're going to look at these things and go, well, is there some value in this for my own patients? And I've been looking at the science and going, yeah, we see weight loss, but nothing extra special over and above that. So I was at a really big conference on what we call chrononutrition, so timed eating, there in Aberdeen in March. And it was so fascinating because we had 2 days and like we'd people from all over the world, you know, from MIT and all the rest. And basically they were kind of going, oh, yeah, OK, yeah, they lost weight, but that was it. Or lost a bit of weight and that was it. And they looked at diabetes and they looked at cholesterol. They looked at all these different things. And it was the funniest conference I've ever been at, because barring the information on sleep and weight, it really came out of, yeah, we study this, but it's not doing anything particularly special. Now, as I said,
okay, there's another whole industry wiped out.
Well, it's a useful tool. No, it suits some people. And as fad diets go, it's not the worst, because you're actually eating quite well the rest of the time. But, you know, and if it suits people, go for it. I wouldn't stop someone from doing it. But it doesn't, all the claims for it don't back up.
Okay. What's happening in your body on a yo-yo diet?
So a couple of things. One of the big things that happens when people sort of crash diet like that is they think that they are just going to lose fat, but what they will also lose is muscle. And that's because no matter, even if you're building, if you're eating a lot of protein with it, you will generally, if you reduce your calories too far, your body is going to strip your muscle to try and fuel that. And people think of that muscle from arms and legs, but you're talking off your ribs, your diaphragm, even in some cases off your heart, like it literally strips from everywhere if you're really bringing it down. And what I would see is people who do a lot of these crash diets, they come into me, often where they come into me is because their hair is falling out. And it's because they've cut out fat, for example, or too little protein, and your hair needs for that to happen. But what we see long term is problems with bone health, because they, you know, if you reduce your protein a lot and you reduce your calcium, and a lot of people will do things like cut out dairy and all the rest, we see those bone issues coming on. But I think the worst thing is in the head, because, you know, if you go on a crash diet, 90% of people can only stick that for 3 days. And then people think there's something wrong with them, or that they lack willpower or something if they eat after 3 days. But hunger is a very powerful biological drive. It's like breathing. Like if you try and hold your breath, how long can you hold it before your body's actually going to make you breathe? And it's the same with hunger. How long can you actually resist hunger before your body is literally going to take over and make you eat? And what I see then is people who start onto these sort of crash diets, they get into this binge cycle where they starve themselves, you know, Monday to Friday. Friday comes along and think they're just so hungry that they end up binging and they don't have any control over it. So then they think, well, I've binged now, I better starve for next week. So it just sets you up to have binge, starve. And, you know,
and not loving yourself.
Oh, and miserable all the time. And you see, this is the thing. It's a joy to me. And I know with a lot of my colleagues who work in dietetics, to work with someone who you actually get them off that binge purge cycle going with it.
How do you get them off it? Or how do you know, if there's someone listening now who's in it?
So what I would say to you, seek help with it. A lot of people are embarrassed or ashamed about it, because in our culture, if you do binge on food, you're considered to have done something wrong. So don't, you know, there will be no judgment from registered dietitians if you talk to someone about it. But actually, the number one thing is, if you're in that binge starve cycle, the first thing you do is that if you are binging, is the next day, don't starve yourself. Just eat your breakfast, lunch and dinner as normal. And this horrifies people, because they often think, well, I have to try and lose the weight. But actually, if you just feed your body, that's how you get rid of the binging. You stop building up this pressure of hunger that your body will overrule you and make you eat. So that actually works. Literally just breakfast, lunch and dinner every day, even if you've binged the night before, get up. And that's the first place to start. But it can be scary for people to do that, and they often do need support and just to feel safe doing that.
So it's interesting you say go to a dietitian, because most people probably haven't even thought of
it's a funny thing.
You go to a dietitian, they'll actually give you like a healthy diet that would help you lose weight,
a little bit. I mean, the thing about when you study to be a dietitian, yes, you do all the biochemistry around nutrition and everything like that. So that's in there. And most dietitians actually don't work around weight. So they'll be working in cancer and liver disease and things like that. But from what you'll also learn, though, is a lot of, you'll do some psychology. Now, we're not psychologists in any stretch, and very often refer to psychologists, but you will do a little bit. You'll also do behavior change, motivation, a lot of counseling skills, in the sense the dietitian will listen. And what I would find with a lot of people I've worked with over the years is, often, because you'll sit and talk and listen, you'll often be the first person someone tells you about an issue. And maybe you will refer them on to the psychologist if that's required. But sometimes it's the first time the person can sit down and go, actually, I really don't feel great about this. I'm really, mentally, and it's just to actually go and talk to someone. But I do think you're right about the dietitian. You know, we go and see a physio and all the rest, but we will take random nutrition advice from anywhere.
So, yes. So now that I have a dietitian in front of me, I'm going to look for some diet advice. So what is... how do you do healthy, sustainable weight loss? Or is there such a thing?
There is such a thing. Now, it's not easy. And definitely for some people, we do know that the hormones that control our appetite for some people are just very, very difficult to manage. So for some people, they do need bigger support. But for the average person who wants to lose a few pounds, get on a smaller plate. Like, get off the giant dinner plates that we have, and your dinner plate shouldn't be bigger than your hand. And they can put a rim around that, but that's actually dinner plates from the 60s. Plate sizes are 3 inches bigger. So a lot of people are eating very healthy lunches and dinners, but the sizes are just too big. And the second thing is, would you just stop snacking? Do you know, you need breakfast, lunch, dinner, possibly one other snack in the day. Otherwise, knock that on the head. We did not snack 20 years ago. I mean, you probably remember that. There was no snacking when we were growing up. But this whole snacking, 3, 4, 5 snacks a day, we don't need it.
Do we not need to prevent a blood sugar crash in between meals?
No,
please.
Is that not the thing about a handful of almonds,
isn't it?
I'm not saying hang around starving, but you should be hungry by the time you get to your dinner. This idea that you should never be hungry. Like, you should be hungry sitting down.
So you're saying
your
absolutely there's no need to eat between meals whatsoever?
If there's a long time and you're uncomfortably hungry, please absolutely eat. But this mindless grazing all day long, just stop.
Okay, registered dietitian Sarah Keogh, thank you very much for